Hello and welcome to Fight Opinion Radio number 5. I'm Adam Summers, as always being joined by Mike Sempervivi. And also in the studio today is yet another FightOpinion.com member of the staff, as some people like to say, very, very valued member of the FightOpinion.com team, Rob Sayers. And Rob, we're going to have you on the show to discuss the UFC pay-per-view coming up this weekend, which we're still going to do, but there's been a bit of very sad breaking news that's been going on as we've been heading up to recording, and I'm sure as everybody who's listening probably knows by now, we're talking about the death of the legendary Carlson Gracie. And before Mike and I give our own comments on it, just Rob, your thoughts on Carlson Gracie and just where he's going to stand in the history of MMA and just what his legacy is.
Well, as a lot of people know, he was one of the pioneers of the sport of jiu-jitsu. He was around from pretty much the very beginning. He fought in Vale Tudo in the early days, was very successful there, but I think his true legacy really lies in the fighters he's trained. He's trained some really good guys. Most notably, as of recent, has been Stefan Bonner from the Ultimate Fighter Season 1, who's been very successful in the UFC thus far. And I think his instruction is really what's going to live on. Already I'm seeing across the internet students of his. It's been a pretty heartbreaking ordeal for a lot of people in the jiu-jitsu community because he was very influential with his knowledge and his style of instruction.
Now, Mike, the cause of death is something that still seems to be a little bit up in the air as we record this. And Carlson Gracie, he obviously wasn't a young man at 72 years old, but by all reports, you know, was a fairly healthy guy. And we've heard reports that he in recent weeks had fallen ill, that he had checked himself or that he had been checked into a Chicago area hospital. And just there's varying reports right now on just what was the cause of death or what led to his illness.
Yeah, the only thing we know for sure is his body is going to be taken back to Brazil for burial there. But yeah, he was very active up until the last couple of months. He did train Bonner, was also training Miguel Torres. And apparently there's been a couple of rumors about if it was diabetes or complications from kidney stones or liver problems or prostate gland problems. And not to sound insensitive, it just kind of sounds like maybe he did die of just old age, of all those complications coming together at once. As all the stories of his former students are going to come out over the next couple of days, obviously probably more is going to come out about exactly what did it. And if there's going to be an autopsy, I'm sure that's going to say something as well.
Yeah, you have to figure both Mike and Rob that in terms of remembering Carlson Gracie, that some people who are casual fans may not understand the impact that Carlson had. And also, maybe a little bit surprised by just how much of an outpouring there's going to be. I mean, we've already seen on the UFC's website, their main story is expressing condolences regarding Carlson Gracie's death. And just, you almost get the sense that Carlson Gracie is going to be somebody who is like many other people, but that his legend will probably grow and people will come to realize as time goes on how influential he really was.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think maybe, as you mentioned, some of the newer fans of the sport really aren't going to fully appreciate what has happened originally. But I think some of the older MMA fans and especially a lot of the jiu-jitsu guys, I think the realm of sport Brazilian jiu-jitsu, his name's maybe a little more famous than just MMA. And I think we're going to see such an outpour that maybe some of the newer fans will be a little more knowledgeable about who the man was and what he did by the time, you know, all is said and done.
Yeah, I'm going to be kind of interested to hear some of the more legendary stories that come out about him. I think there's already one up on Chairdog right now talking about some of the fights he was in, almost defending Helio's honor after Helio had lost in Vale Tudo bouts, and he kind of revenged those fights. And it's going to be interesting to hear some of the amazing stories that come out about that world then, about what fighting was like then in the 50s and the 60s, because kind of take it for granted that you almost, obviously you don't forget about it, but you almost think UFC and everything did kind of start with Hoist Gracie, and we've gone back to that celebration recently with Hoist going to fight Matt Hughes, that you forget what came before that, and there was a lot before that, and it's going to be interesting to hear all the stories that come out.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, this man was, he was doing essentially MMA before the rest of the world had ever heard about it, you know, when it was beginning to be a big sport down in Brazil way back when. And, you know, that's essentially what the UFC was. That was the Gracies bringing Vale Tudo to America. And, you know, it was a sport in South America long before it ever came to our shores. And this man was there from the very start. So I think this is going to help bring to light maybe a little more of his legacy, kind of, unfortunately post-mortem. But, you know, I think it will maybe pique the interest of some of the newer fans or people who are less knowledgeable about the old days.
That's something that you're mentioning, newer fans that are less knowledgeable about the older days, which it is completely understandable, but you hope that if anything comes out of this, and anything comes out of this much talk, you know, being, and this much attention being paid to the life of Carlson Gracie, it'll be that hopefully people will realize that, and will come to understand that even though MMA right now is a very mainstream, if you want to use that sort of hot button word that the UFC likes to throw around, it's a very mainstream sport right now. But as you mentioned, it's something that it was much more of a, I don't know, underground isn't necessarily the politically correct term, but in Carlson Gracie, you have a guy who was definitely a pioneer before people were really paying attention to what it was all about. But I know this is a story that, as much justice as any of the three of us can do to it, I know that in the upcoming weeks, there's going to be people, hopefully people will be coming forward, and hopefully there will be people that we can get on the program that have trained with Carlson Gracie and that have a little bit of personal experience with him that can shed even more light than any of us obviously could, just being a little bit more than casual observers of the sport.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to put it for a newer fight fan, if there's no Carlson Gracie, there's no Brazilian top team.
Yeah.
At least as you know, obviously there may be one, but there wouldn't be one in the form it was in. And, that's the easiest way, I guess, to put it like that. If you think about that for a minute, without Sperry, without Nogueira, without some of these other guys, and frankly, without Bonner.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point. You mentioned somebody like Mario Sperry, who in a lot of ways, he may not be quite as influential just because of the time he came around, but in a lot of ways, there's similarities to Carlson Gracie in that even though Mario Sperry is a fighter, he's probably going to be remembered when all is said and done, much like Carlson Gracie, for being a trainer first. So that's a legacy right there that Carlson Gracie leaves. So I know that as I said, this is something, and this is a story that I'm sure we'll be touching on it and discussing much more in the weeks and probably even months ahead. But right now, I think the only thing we can do is right now throw it to a commercial break. And when we come back, we'll talk to Rob for what we initially had brought him into the studio for, which is a discussion of the big fights on the Ultimate Fighting Championship pay-per-view coming up this weekend. So we'll do that and a little bit more right after this.
MonsterWrestlingRings.com. Boxing rings, six-sided rings, any kind of pro wrestling ring you could possibly imagine, they build it. 15 years of experience with over 500 rings built, they've shipped them all over the world. In fact, you may actually be watching a wrestling promotion right now that's using one of those rings. Get off the kiddie trampoline and buy yourself a real wrestling ring. MonsterWrestlingRings.com. MonsterWrestlingRings.com.
All right, we're back this week on Fight Opinion Radio here at FightOpinion.com. I am Mike Sempervivi along with Mr. Rob Sayers and Adam Summers. And after some of the more negative or more down things we talked about earlier before the break, now we get to go on to a little bit of a happier note. The only way I'd be happier about this is, well, I didn't have to pay for it. But coming up February 4th, UFC 57, Liddell Couture 3. I'm not sure how much it is, $34.95, I believe it is, but taking place from the Mandalay Bay Event Center, and we kind of talked about this a little bit last week, Adam, so Rob is here with us this week, and we're going to talk about the top of the card.
It's a card that, at least from casual fan appeal, outside of the top of the card, there probably isn't a whole lot there, I get the impression. I don't know how you feel about, just briefly, the undercard, Rob. That a lot of it is, it's matches that very well may end up being good fights, but a lot of them probably aren't going to matter in terms of the overall scheme of things in the UFC in 06.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not sure if it's listed on the undercard. It was really, I think it was only the second fight listed, on the UFC's website. It was, Diaz versus Joe Riggs.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I think outside of the top fights, that's going to end up being not only one of the more entertaining fights, but probably one of the most, important fights as far as ranking goes. Everything else is, I don't know. All the other fights just seem like just trying out new heavyweights, to be honest with you.
Now with Diaz Riggs, how do you feel about that fight just in terms of what either guy is going to do if they lose? Because to me, it seems like it's really a must-win for both guys in terms of trying to stay in any sort of title contention.
I agree. Before his last fight, I think Diaz was ranked fairly high. He had had some pretty impressive wins, but then he went and lost to a guy who even he considers pretty much a rookie and a guy who, you know, in his own words, didn't deserve to be in the UFC. And that definitely isn't good for him or his image. Joe Riggs, aside from his fight with Chris Lytle, has not been doing so well. He was submitted fairly easily by both Ivan Salivary and Matt Hughes. So, really, both these guys are kind of on a downswing right now, and I think whoever loses, it's going to hurt them, and whoever wins is definitely that win will definitely be needed for them at this point in their career.
Now, Rob, I do want to ask you this question. As it was announced today that finally, and I berated Dana White for this a little bit on the PPH show, finally they have a Spanish language announcer, and that is going to be former WBC 130-pound champion Genaro Hernandez, who also does some of the Boxeo de Oro stuff on HBO Latino. If Diaz does win this fight and wins this fight impressively, because of the amount of Mexican fans in Southern California and in Nevada and their pay-per-view buyers, do you try to market a Diaz feud with Sanchez almost in the way of like a Barrera Morales in boxing? Do you really try to get those two going together because they will get to be very electric?
Whether it'll work or not, I do think that's what Dana's going to end up doing. I think it makes too much sense. At least it will in his eyes. How it'll actually play out, you know, the MMA fans are different than boxing fans, and whether they're actually going to buy that up, you know, it remains to be seen. I'd like to see a rematch. And if, you know, Diaz wins the rematch, I wouldn't mind seeing a third fight. I mean, I think these guys put on a good fight last time, and, you know, put them against each other as many times as you want, and I'll watch it. But, whether marketing to a, you know, that specific, group of people is really going to work, I really don't know. It'll be good for the fans to watch, whether it be good for, you know, Hispanic fans or otherwise, you know, I really can't say. I have a feeling though that, they'll end up doing that.
And with that whole series, as we already saw, the first fight taking place on Spike TV, at least in my eyes, you'd have to think that the UFC would want to continue with that series taking place on Spike TV rather than on pay-per-view, just because you have a better chance. Considering that, you know, you're not asking people to pay $35 to try to hook that demographic that they really haven't been able to get, that, you know, if the fight is on free TV, I mean, you know, anybody's going to want to watch or have a better chance of watching that than shelling out $35.
Yeah, there's two ways of looking at it. Obviously, if they put it on free TV, you know, everyone and their brother's going to be watching it. But if they were able to pique enough interest with the last Spike TV, it may be a big seller on a pay-per-view card. The people who saw it on Spike, maybe that's what they needed. You know, that'll be their motivation. Oh, hey, they put on a great fight last time. I've never bought a UFC before. I may as well go ahead and do it now so I can see this. You know,
with a guy they may know already from the series.
Yeah, absolutely. Diego Sanchez is already a pretty big name. He was a pretty colorful character on the show. Definitely a standout, a very dominant fighter. And, you know, he fought a decent fight against a guy who, I guess you could say talked a lot of trash going into it. Nick Diaz had a lot to say about that fight. And, there was a lot of drama leading up to it. It was a good fight. So, you know, either way, I think they could do it. If they put another one on free TV and there ends up being a third fight, then I think they would be dumb not to put it on a pay-per-view, because then just that extra build-up would, I think, be excellent for generating pay-per-view sales.
Yeah, exactly. I think I would completely agree with you that if a third fight materialized, say, if they have a second fight and Diaz is able to get the victory, that then it's a no-brainer to go to pay-per-view.
Absolutely.
On that third fight. And that's a fight that, if it's the third one in the series, it's 1-1, even though it's not a title fight, I could very easily see that at least being a co-main event with the star power and with that sort of storyline heading into it.
Yeah,
I tell you
about it.
Yeah, I think you obviously probably wouldn't be a main event situation, but as a semi-main event, that's what you shove down the throats of those 100 to 150,000 pay-per-view buyers of Morales fights and Barrera fights. They're good for at least that alone. And if you really start marketing that hard, I think they're going to be in good shape. And what a great fight if that does actually come off a third time. I guess we're kind of really jumping to conclusions there, but I guess we should probably get back on track here a little bit for what's actually on the rest of the card.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. And one of the fights, Rob, that I know we talked about this in previous weeks on the show, and I don't know if I'm the only guy that's actually excited about this fight. Maybe it's because I'm a ground fighting whore. I'm really not sure. But Babalu Sobral and Mike Van Arsdale, I actually think that this could be a very exciting fight, especially from a ground perspective. And it's another fight that could have title implications, especially if Babalu wins.
It's funny you should say that. I actually have here in my notes next to this fight, potential fight of the night. I'm also a ground whore myself, so I was really excited when I heard about this matchup. Babalu, his ground skills need no introduction. Amazing submission guy. Mike Van Arsdale is a fantastic wrestler, pretty much to the same degree as Randy Couture. Been wrestling for many years, and he and Couture put on a wrestling clinic in their fight. So I think this is going to be really good. It's going to be a really dangerous fight for Mike Van Arsdale if he does play his typical game. He's going to want to get Babalu down and probably put him on his back and pound on him, and Babalu is real dangerous from his back. So Mike Van Arsdale needs to be really careful. He can pull out the win. He's a really good fighter. He's been fighting for many years. But Babalu is just one of those submission guys. He can pull that out of nowhere. So my prediction is Babalu by submission.
You think he'll get him early, or you think Van Arsdale's going to at least be able to drag it out, maybe take it deep into the second or even the third?
I see it going to the second or third easily. I mean, he's a good wrestler. He's, you know, not going to get himself submitted that quick. It's going to be later on, maybe when he tires out, makes a mistake. It definitely won't be early, though.
And me, I like seeing people get punched in the face. I'm not that much of a ground whore. Although if it's even, I know, but if it's even half the fight, or even a quarter of the fight Oserito Buscape was, okay, I can live with that. I can live with that. I don't know what I said last week as far as predictions go, but the more I thought about it, the more I actually see Babalu winning in the first round by submission. I just have that feeling. I don't know why, and I probably don't have a good reason as to why, but the more I thought about it, the more I can see him. Exactly. Van Arsdale taking him down and just seeing something come from the bottom. I don't know what it is, but I can see just a submission coming from the bottom for Babalu. So I don't know. I don't know. What did I say last week, Adam?
That's a good question. I think you may have been so bored by the prospect of this fight that you might have actually declined to give a prediction. Because I remember last week, Mike, I was all, you know, very excited about and saying how I think this might actually be better than the main event. And you may have alluded to some sort of mental incapability on my behalf, so.
Well, I can't remember. I remember I hit the mute button for a second to yawn, but,
Wow. That's alright. You'll be yawning, and you'll probably miss when Babalu hits that triangle and ends the fight. So don't worry about it at all.
The only thing I want to see hit is Frank Mir hit Marcio Cruz.
Yeah, that's a professional segue right there. That's Mike Sempervivi right there. I'm trying
Bravo.
To learn. Exactly. I'm trying to learn from the best here in the studio, but since you did mention that fight, Frank Mir and Marcio Cruz, we talked about it last week, Rob, on the show, and I'm of the opinion that this is a very dangerous fight for the UFC to be giving a just returning Frank Mir, who had a very serious injury and some setbacks that have kept him out for a long, long time. Cruz isn't exactly the most well-known fighter, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that Cruz would be able to catch him with something and submit him. And if that somewhat unlikely scenario happens, then the UFC's in a bit of trouble.
Well, this is sort of an interesting matchup. On paper, it's completely one-sided. We have a former champ against a guy who has one professional MMA fight. In theory, Mir should roll over him. But then again, Mir is known for his submissions. He definitely prefers the ground. And he's fighting Cruz, who's a BJJ title holder many times over, and actually won Abu Dhabi in 2000 in, I believe, 99 kilo division. So he's fighting a good submission guy, and looking at their submission, you know, pedigree, I would say that Cruz is probably the better, you know, straight grappler. But as pretty much anybody who's done both will tell you, MMA grappling is completely different than sport grappling, and Mir is definitely going to be more knowledgeable there, because it's one of those situations where you can't take, you can't leave your face uncovered too long in the cage to try to sweep or whatever as you can in Abu Dhabi. So I think Mir is going to have that advantage. The big question marks are all on Mir, really. He's going to have a lot of ring rust going into this. He hasn't fought in quite some time. And he's had questionable stamina in the past. So if Cruz could end up being an up-and-coming fighter and really pull out an upset here, or we're going to see Mir hit him a lot and end up winning.
Am I wrong in saying, is Cruz bigger than Mir? Slightly bigger than Mir?
You would be correct in terms of weight. They're both listed as 6'3", while Cruz is actually 6 pounds heavier at 246 pounds. So Mir is definitely not going to have a size advantage.
Yeah, I guess the official weigh-ins are going to be soon. That kind of surprised me, too. One, I think Mir's back too early. I think he's back too early, and a guy that size, too, who is not an unknown. Obviously, he fought last October. I think with that, in fact, that was Sinclair Babalu was on, if I'm not correct. So I guess that's the linkage here, too. But he's back a little bit too soon, and back against a guy that size who's kind of an unknown. Interesting planning here for what they want to build up, because they made a big deal out of the chance of Mir and Arlovski later in the year. Maybe it's not crushed if he loses this, but yeah, really bizarre to me, the whole matchmaking for this.
Yeah, if Mir somehow loses this, it's going to be a lot harder to build him back up to a fight against Arlovski. And Rob, I kind of want to throw this to you, because this is, again, something that Mike and I talked about last week. The matchmaking is a bit puzzling, because you have guys out there, I don't know, like, say, Justin Eilers, or even though he may be a little bit more dangerous than that, Paul Buntello, and guys who would probably just stand up and strike with Mir, where Mir, as we've seen in those instances, is able to get the submission on guys like that. That it would seem to be a little bit more of a sure bet throwing him in there with somebody like that against a rather large, somewhat unknown, but very skilled ground fighter.
I agree. I think this is a really bad style matchup for the UFC to do. And I think you really have to question their motives. You can't logically think they're trying to build up a fighter by giving them somebody like Cruz when it's a really bad situation like this. You know, one could arguably say that, yeah, they're just giving them a warm-up match if they were feeding them someone like Buntello or Eilers or somebody of that nature who's just going to want to sit there and bang out with them. Both these fighters would be more than happy to go to the ground, and that's a place where either fighter could really pull out the submission win, and it's going to be equally dangerous for both guys. My prediction is for Mir. I think that the fact that he's fought a lot of really good guys, he's has a lot more MMA experience. Like I said, combat grappling is a little different, so I think that experience is going to give Mir the edge. I don't know how long he's actually been training 100%, but you know, it'd be dumb for him to come back in if he wasn't pretty close to 100%. So I really think he's going to take this. I'll be, but I won't be extremely surprised if Cruz does. It's near 50-50 coin toss, but a slight edge to Mir.
Yeah, I'm gonna do something, Rob, that I probably shouldn't here, but I'm going to put myself out there, and in terms of my prediction, I'm gonna say Cruz. I just have this really bad feeling that as the fight goes on, and especially if it's the type of fight where it's on the ground for the most of the time, and it's a very active ground fight in terms of a lot of transitions and such, that Mir may gas sometime around the end of the second, early third round. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Cruz pull this out with a decision victory, a close decision victory. But I mean, obviously the smart money or the even bet, you would say the good bet would be Frank Mir. But I just, and you've alluded to it, and Mike has as well, I really think that there's a chance Cruz could pull this out. In which case, who knows? Maybe as we end 2006, you know, months down the road, we'll be looking at some sort of bizarre Tim Sylvia Marcio Cruz UFC heavyweight title match. I'm sure that would make Dana White very happy.
Yeah, very much so. You know, like I said, I won't be terribly surprised if Cruz does win this. He's got all the tools to do it. I think experience is going to play a big role here. If it does go in the later rounds, though, it's going to spell trouble for Mir.
I think Mir needs to do it early, and I think he will actually do it early, cashing in with something. But if Cruz does win, you know how great that's going to be for Dana White, because he can look back and say, he's got a guy in Cruz who's a relatively young fighter. He's only had one official MMA fight before this. Mm-hmm. And then he's got Mir, who he can just put up and say, you see what happens when you drive the motorcycle and you may not take things as seriously. Remember this, young fighters. I can believe that happening. As he turns more into Vince McMahon, I can see that occurring.
You think Dana would be happy, though, with his heavyweight money match, if not being completely destroyed, at least being delayed and some of the luster being taken off? Has he really become Vince McMahon to that level?
Yes. Do you know why? Because he can keep hiding. I take this back. Not hiding Arlovski. But when your heavyweight champion can just stand there and look mean and not have a whole lot of guys to fight, and all of your good fights are taking place at 205 or below,
yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing right now. So I don't think they should be rushing anything when it comes to Arlovski.
It's a shame, too, because I'd really like to see Arlovski against some decent competition, because, you know, the man's a beast, and I'd really like to see him in a fight that, you know, goes to the second round.
Well, yeah, it'd be nice to see UFC, and they'd pay for someone.
Yeah.
Fine, but when it comes to the heavyweights, you know what? Pay for someone. Don't throw Kaz Fujita or somebody who's going to be just a ridiculous style matchup, but give him, just make it a matchup at least worth seeing, or at least something new.
Yeah, it'll never happen, but you can't tell me that there's any MMA fan out there that wouldn't want to see, you know, the UFC throw money at, say, Nogueira, and see Nogueira and Arlovski. I mean, even though it may be similar to Fedor and Nogueira, you're at least going to get a hell of a fight, and it's going to be a bit more of a competitive fight than what you're looking at in the heavyweight scene right now.
I still say they need to buy Alexander.
That would
be money.
That would be tremendous. And maybe, knowing the UFC, maybe they'll just call him Fedor and try to pass him off as being, you know, the real Fedor, the real Emelianenko. You never know. I mean, you said he's turning into Vince.
Well,
they him under a mask.
They bring Alexander and then Rosario over.
Exactly.
And it's kind of like the old wrestling thing of the fake Razor Ramon and the fake Diesel.
Exactly. You're Fedor Nogueira.
Except these guys can actually beat your ass.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Lost control of this segment quick.
That's shocking. We'll try to rein it in here by talking about the main event, which, of course, takes place in that loaded 205-pound division that you guys were speaking of. Liddell Couture 3. This fight is It's almost ridiculous, but it's also very good in terms of the epic proportions that this fight has taken on in terms of the UFC's advertising for this fight and the hype machine for this fight. I mean, we just had this past week a hour-long Liddell Couture 3 countdown show on Spike TV where we got to see their comments in between rounds, and it was actually very well produced. But in terms of an actual fight, and I'll just throw this out there to both of you guys, do you think there's any chance of this fight living up to the hype, or is it a case where it's probably just going to end up being a replay of the second fight?
To the contrary, I think it's going to be a replay of the first.
Really?
Yes.
So you're solidly in the camp of Couture when it comes to how this fight's going to turn out, I assume.
Absolutely.
What have you seen over the last few fights for both guys that would make you think that?
Well, right now, I mean, there's no question. Chuck Liddell is absolutely on fire. He's the man. He's just on a streak. Right now, the big question mark is Couture. I think the question that comes up the most is if age has caught up with him, and I personally don't think so. If you watch the fight with Mike Van Arsdale, the pace at which he kept that wrestling matchup was at a rate that would put a lot of people 20 years younger than him to shame. His cardio was just phenomenal in that fight. And that's one of those things that's hard to appreciate unless you grapple yourself, but I got tired watching that fight.
And he's 40.
Yeah. And for him to keep up the pace like he did, I even read an interview with Mike Van Arsdale about why he lost that fight, and he said, he essentially gassed and couldn't defend the submission any longer. And he said it seemed like from start to end, the pace and the strength and everything about Couture never stopped. It was just an onslaught from beginning to end, and he never seemed to get tired. And, you know, when age catches up with you, you don't act like that. So, whether his speed on his feet is different, you know, people debate that to no end, but I don't think he had a chance to really get his game plan going in the second fight. I don't think that was a really good indication. I think that right now Couture is probably one of the smartest, most coachable fighters in the game. I think if anybody can correct a mistake and come back and turn it into a victory, it's going to be him. You bet he's been analyzing every fight that Liddell's had since then. He's been analyzing everything he's done. He's gone back to the drawing board, and he's going to fix, you know, everything he can. And I think he's going to be able to do it.
I tell you what, if he didn't learn anything from that second fight, don't come into the ring with that woman again. do you remember? It's not a surprise. I remember a lot of people were that he were even blaming it on the girl he came to the octagon with.
I haven't heard that.
You didn't. Rewatch that second fight at the beginning when he's coming down. You'll know what I'm talking about, because some people actually threw that one up there. They were so surprised he lost. But you know, the other thing that didn't stop stamina are punches to the face.
Yeah.
And obviously he was taken out of the game kind of early there because of the eye poke, but I don't think Liddell, because I think a lot of people are also going to look for Liddell to take a fall. He's got the Zions commercials. He's kind of ubiquitous right now for UFC, as well he should be, and really not to say that Couture is not. I mean, he's just as part of that. They're going to be linked forever. But I think right now Liddell's got more to lose by far than Couture, and not to say that it makes Couture any less hungry or for any reason going into this, or that Liddell wouldn't be as hungry, but I think Liddell's got a whole lot to prove right now. I don't think he wins by knockout. I think he wins a decision. I think Couture, he's not able to sting Couture badly, but he's able to sting him badly enough where he's able to control him and keep him away enough.
Well, you mentioned going to a decision. If it goes to a decision, I don't see any way it could not go to Couture. We have seen Chuck gas in the later rounds in some fights, and Couture is just a cardio machine. So if it goes in the later fights, it's going to be all Randy.
I don't know. I think he can actually keep him off. I mean, it's not going to be the prettiest thing in the world, but I think he's going to actually be able to, with strikes, actually be able to wear Randy down, not a whole lot, but actually able to hold the advantage over most of the rounds.
Well,
I can see him being busier. It's hard to go against Couture when you're saying busier. But you know what I mean? But I think he's going to be able to do more, I guess, effective damage is the word I'm looking for, effective striking.
You know, it may. I actually watched their first fight recently, and Couture was outstriking him, beating him to the punch, and really getting Chuck out of his game. And I think had the second fight lasted a little bit longer, and had he been able to get into his game plan, you know, that would have happened. I don't really blame anything in particular. He made one slip up. He got tagged. You know, as they say, if Chuck Liddell hits you, you're going down. You know, that's no knock against him. You know, you get knocked out by Chuck, there's no shame in that. I don't think it was really said anything bad about him. I think had it not happened early, that would have been another good fight, and Couture very well could have pulled out the victory. And I think that's what's exactly going to happen here. I think he's going to, his counterpunching and everything is going to be effective against Chuck Liddell, as it was in the first fight. And unless he gets tagged with a good hit like he did in the second, I think it's going to be Big John McCarthy pulling Couture off of Chuck again.
Wow, that's going a little bit against the grain, at least from
yeah.
what I've heard. But it's very well supported, Rob. My one worry about Randy Couture going into this fight, though, is not his stamina, it's not his heart. To me, it's his reflexes at this age. And I'm not talking about from a wrestling or grappling standpoint, but just in terms of being able to react to the punches. Because to me, even before the legendary magic eye poke that Chuck Liddell is quite proficient at, it just really didn't seem like Chuck was seeing those punches and reacting to the punches the way he usually would. And even, or I should say that Randy was reacting to the punches the way he usually would. And even in Randy's fight with Mike Van Arsdale, there were points in that fight where Van Arsdale was able to effectively strike with Couture. And it just looked like Couture, to me, knew what he wanted to do and knew how to get out of the way of the punches, but it wasn't happening quick enough. And that's something that you've got to figure that time isn't going to help that get any better. And I don't think that in the intervening months, Liddell's punches have gotten any slower or any weaker.
Oh, I agree with that. Whether he's really slowed down or whether we're just seeing, you know, off days or whatever, that remains to be seen. And that's definitely going to spell trouble for him if that is the case. But like I said, he is one of the smarter fighters out there as far as being able to formulate a game plan. And if he's slower, I think he'll be able to make up for it in other areas. You know, there's a lot of fighters who are not as physically gifted as others, but they come in there with a better game plan and better strategy, and they end up winning because of that. So, you know, your physical ability is extremely important, but it's only one of the tools you have. So I think, I don't know. I'm betting on Chuck, but I'm sorry, I'm betting on Randy, but we'll just have to see.
See how convincing my argument was? Adam, I think what you said about the reflexes could actually be referred to a little bit as Mark Coleman-ology.
As long as we don't see Mike, as long as we don't see that terrible, terrible, heartbreaking look on Randy Couture's face that we saw on Mark Coleman's face after he got kicked in the face and knocked out, I believe it was by Pete Williams. That was one of the most disturbing things I've seen in MMA. So yeah, Mike, I hope we don't see that on Couture's face.
Well, yeah, hopefully we don't hear the promo he cut, Mark Coleman cut after the fight with Mirko. Holy shit, I got kicked in the face. Yeah, we know, Mark, we know. It's one of those times you don't give a guy a mic, but you probably shouldn't give me a mic either. As if we keep rambling on here when I should probably throw to commercial break and thank Rob Sayers very, very much for coming in on this segment, as his predictions will probably go 3-0 while mine go 0-3. But
I don't know about that now.
But, Rob, obviously you post on fightopinion.com. People should already know this because they're listening to the show. But do you have any final words of wisdom you'd like to pass on to the minions here?
No, I really don't.
No, see, good.
he fits in already.
I thought about it. I thought for a second, thinking, come up with something clever, and I drew a blank. So.
Oh, come on. I was hoping for a quick 30-second hard-hitting but very insightful analysis of, I don't know, Mario Yamazaki's refereeing style, but maybe we'll save that for next time, Rob, because I'm sure everybody's going to be hearing more from you quite a bit in the upcoming weeks and months on the show. So
whether they want you or not.
Hey, that's our motto, and we're still here in week 5, so
exactly.
Hey, you might as well adopt it. So
all right,
all right. With that, Rob, definitely want to thank you for being on, as Mike said, and right now we're going to throw it to a commercial break and. Mike, after that, we're going to do something that, it's kind of taboo. We're going to talk boxing on an MMA show, which I'm quite looking forward to. So yeah, no takedowns. You're just going to get punched in the face. So that's good times right there. So Mike, I know Mike's ready to punch me in the face. So it'll work out well. So on that note, I think, we'll be right back. Maybe.
Stay tuned.
More knockouts.
Whoa!
What a fight. Pride Fighting Championships Hardcore Knockouts Volume 2. Pride Fighting Championships has assembled the best knockouts from over 8 years of Pride Fights. Nothing but knockouts. If you love knockouts, you're going to love Pride Fighting Championships Hardcore Knockouts Volume 2.
Unbelievable! Oh, this is beautiful! This is unbelievable!
Are you a fight fan? Kakuto.com offers the best memorabilia from K1, Pride, Zero-One, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and so much more. Japanese goods, Japanese prices. That means you pay what a customer pays in Japan. You can't beat it. www.kakuto.com. That's www.kakuto.com.
As I mentioned before the commercial break, we're getting ready to delve into what some people these days, I guess, would call the other fight sport in the States, even though it's obviously much more established and well-known, and that, of course, is boxing. And, Mike, I have to credit you because through you and doing this show with you, I'm beginning to rediscover and rekindle my love affair with boxing, which kind of had gone away when I first started watching MMA and kind of lost interest in boxing, but there's some very good things going on in boxing right now. But Mike, there also is something that fans of the UFC could relate to fans of boxing, which would be the kind of weird state of the boxing heavyweight division right now. It's not exactly the glory days.
Oh, you must mean the fact that it sucks. Yeah.
something like that. I wasn't gonna come right out and say it, but
well, it's the reason that so many people think that boxing is dead. It's like Morales Pacquiao just happened. The return of Arturo Gatti for his whatever was 11th straight sell at Boardwalk Hall just happened over the weekend. Virgil Hill comes back. All of this stuff is going on. But most people, you ask just randomly somebody off the street, they think boxing is dead. And if you ask somebody who's into MMA, they're just kind of waiting on Dana White to, like, come by and, like, stamp the fingers of boxing world that's hanging off the side of a cliff. But the problem is that the heavyweight division is so poor in boxing right now that that's what's actually killing the sport of boxing, because a mainstream fan that sat there and watched Mike Tyson fights and they saw Lennox Lewis, or at least knew who Lennox Lewis was and probably saw the Lewis Tyson fights and the Tyson Holyfield and Tyson Holmes, even going as far as Tyson Spinks and those, that Mike Tyson era of boxing fans were mostly, a lot of them were mainstream fans and a lot of them were into the hype. It's like the Tony Kornheiser mentality of if Mike Tyson is the reason that K1 you know, still throws his name up there. People react to that name. And the heavyweight division right now was left in a pit of dust after Tyson and after Lennox Lewis. Lewis does deserve some credit, and he should deserve a lot more credit, I think, as the years go on. He was the best of a bad lot, and then it proved to be that he was a really good top of that bad lot, because as it stands right now, there's not a whole lot in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic when you talk about the heavyweight division, Mike, and you talk about somebody like Chris Bird, who is a guy that I've always really, really enjoyed watching just because he's a very, very good technical fighter, and obviously a guy who it may be a little bit of a, it may be a little bit unfair to say that he only fights defensively, but he's not exactly a stand in front of you and just punch you and let himself get punched type of exciting fighter. In a lot of ways, Chris Bird, to make an MMA analogy, he's almost like a more successful version of Jeremy Horn. And he's got all the skills, all the talent in the world, and no matter what he does, it seems like he can't get any respect. And I mean, even though the guy's the IBF champion, it seems like people still really don't care about him.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's legitimately, I can't believe anybody would say otherwise, that he's not the number one heavyweight in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, his strengths are the fact that he has such a great defense, and he still in his mind kind of fights like the middleweight fighter that he was a long time ago. He's got great hand speed. He can go on all night in fights as long as he's not getting hit too hard or banged up too much. The problem is those are all of his weaknesses. you know, frankly, the defensive type of fighter and the slick type of fighter and the hand speed, the same thing that hampers Winky, right? Although Winky, I think, is much better all around than Chris Bird is. But the same thing that hampers him hampers Bird. And that's what makes him an unwatchable fighter, not to the level that John Ruiz is, although we'll get to that later. But Chris Bird, his style lends itself to long and boring bouts. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's been the big problem with him and Don King. There's been a whole lot of fighting back and forth over Chris Bird's promotional rights and Chris Bird's wife bitching about Don King and them actually going to court because Bird was promised a X amount of dollars to fight under Don King. He was supposed to make an X amount of dollars in some of the title defenses he's had, but he hasn't made that money. And the reasoning is, as Don King would say, because nobody wants to see him fight. And that's flat out the reason that he's going to go over to Germany, or at least the plan is sometime this spring. There's a plan that he's going to go over and fight Vladimir Klitschko in Germany.
Yeah.
Now, that happened once before. Okay?
Yeah.
It resulted in Chris Bird getting the shit knocked out of him for 12 rounds. I think he was dropped once or twice in that fight. And the WBO title that he had won from Vladimir's brother Vitaly about 3 months earlier, because Vitaly quit on the stool with a shoulder injury, Vladimir got his revenge back and just battered him to no end, and I can't see there being much of a difference in this fight either. I think the only way Bird wins is if he's just that elusive, but frankly, I don't get, he's not going to win a fight in Germany against Klitschko if it goes to a decision. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you about that. Now, talking about Vladimir Klitschko, it's a guy who, for whatever reason, he seems to have a little bit more, if not mainstream, but at least name value amongst sports fans and amongst casual boxing fans. Do you think there's any chance that a Klitschko title reign could in any way elevate the heavyweight division again? Or is it a case of, even if he does have an impressive victory and has the ability to be an impressive champion, that there won't be that many guys for him to have impressive fights with?
Well, that's a problem too, and it's not like Vladimir is the most exciting fighter on the planet either.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who will gas, who has a tendency to gas. I mean, he did that in a couple of fights. I think it was Corey Sanders was the fight that he really got blown out of. I'm trying to think of one after that too. Maybe it was LeBron Brewster. Maybe I'm trying to think of what exactly that fight was. It doesn't come to me right now. But the thing that helps Vladimir Klitschko and helps any chance of him being a successful champion, if he does win that WBO belt, the IBF belt, is the fact that HBO has thrown, this would be his third separate promotional campaign. Okay, well, the one that was ended by Corey Sanders, the one that I believe was ended by Lamon Brewster, and then the one that just started up here where he won a decision over Samuel Peter. And a good fight for Peter, but a fight that he probably took a fight too early. I think they should have gave him somebody else. A little bit bigger before facing off against Vladimir. But really, that was on the undercard of Miguel Cotto's fight.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it doesn't say a lot for drawing.
It doesn't really say a lot for him, but there is another thing is that he's huge. Vladimir Klitschko is a big guy, and everybody likes to hold out hope that someone that big can get all of their stuff together and become a dominant force. They did it with his brother.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a whole lot of hope behind Vitaly after he was busted open against Lennox Lewis that finally he got everything together and he was approaching his peak. And then to find out that he turned down Haseem Rahman 4 times, and granted there were legitimate injuries in there too, but frankly, he did not want to face Haseem Rahman.
Yeah.
And the other thing to this too, and it may sound bad, but you know what? People like great white hopes.
Yeah.
White people like great white hopes.
Yeah.
They do. You know, there's another thing too. Black people really like great white hopes because it's usually a black guy beating the shit out of the great white hope.
Yeah, if you need evidence of that, see Ray Mercer versus Tommy Morrison. I will say it right now, Mike, as a young boxing fan who's naive enough to believe that Tommy Morrison was actually good, that was a heartbreaking evening. I will never forget the repeated images of Tommy Morrison just dying multiple times in the corner and the referee doing absolutely nothing to stop it.
Yeah, about the 15 good right hooks I think he took from Mercer going down into that. The best part about that, though, for me was actually after that, as I think Ray Mercer, one of his next fights, I think it may have been the very next fight, was against Larry Holmes.
Yeah.
And this was the fight where I believe Mercer was trying to whisper something about taking a dive to Holmes as Holmes would back him up into the corner, look at the camera and scream, "I'm not Tommy Morrison."
Yeah. That's what the heavyweight division needs. More Larry Holmes.
More Larry Holmes.
Exactly.
Hey, Larry Holmes interviews.
Exactly. Now, he's not quite Larry Holmes, Mike, but a charismatic character in the heavyweight division and also a title holder in his own right and former unified world champion. Speaking of Haseem Rahman.
My man.
Yeah, he definitely, he has the feel when you see him, when you watch him fight, when you hear him talk, of a guy who's a heavyweight champion. But he also, which doesn't really make him that different from many other heavyweight fighters, he's had his share of kind of embarrassing and really bizarre moments in and out of the ring.
Yeah, for a guy, Haseem Rahman, and I love Haseem Rahman because he's a Baltimore guy, and I'm a Baltimore guy, although unless it's somebody from Washington, then I can claim I'm a Washington guy, too. I was from somewhere there in the middle, but the problem with Haseem Rahman is, for all the great things about him, he's talkative, he's charismatic, he looks the part, he's a smart guy, glib guy. Most of Haseem Rahman's most notable moments have been his worst ones. I mean, yeah. the loss to Lennox Lewis, where he was knocked out, and most newspapers carried the picture the next day that had him laid out in the ring, actually with his head in the Don King Productions crown.
That right there, Mike. That's my favorite boxing picture ever. It's a political cartoon that nobody drew.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a very good picture. And the fact that, to top it off, PTI, pardon the interruption show on ESPN, and a lot of other places where they didn't carry that picture, or if they did carry it, they carried the other one of the connection of Lennox Lewis's fist onto his face to end that second fight. Now, to his credit, I mean, Rahman was once the unified heavyweight champion of the world, but remember what was going on in that time. Lennox Lewis was in, I believe it was in South Africa, filming a movie part.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was something going on at that time, too, where Larry Merchant and a lot of other people said, hey, Lewis is right for the picking, and then once he got in the ring and you saw his shape, he really was right for the picking.
Yeah.
And after that monumental event where Rahman did win the heavyweight title, he had a car accident during the parade in Baltimore.
Exactly. That's the way you cap off your world championship victory, by getting in an accident during your own parade. That's not exactly a good portent for the future of your title reign. At least I wouldn't think so.
Now, yeah, well, that's true. But then he followed it up with good old traditional boxing fare as during a heat up angle, as we'll call it in professional wrestling terms, a heat up angle with Gary Miller, I think it was, on the ESPN Up Close show. It was great as Rahman had a discussion of gay as a verb with Lennox Lewis, which resulted into just a nice pushy shovey fight where somebody went through a table.
I mean, that seems perfectly logical to me.
And then he goes out and gets, like you said, suffered the brutal loss, and then he goes and gets an extra head on top of his head, and I think he actually put it in those terms, my head got a head on it, after he suffered a nasty hematoma at the hands of Evander Holyfield, who, you know what, proved right there once again that maybe Mike Tyson was right to bite that fucker's ear off.
Yeah.
As much as he threw that head around, and I was always a Holyfield guy, but yeah, that Rockman fight was something that did it. And there was also that thing earlier in Rockman's career where he was knocked out of the ring against Oleg Niskayev. And I know because I was there. And then a small fight broke out, or actually several small fights broke out all over the crowd, and including including a lot of faces from Baltimore took that bus trip back.
So did you, are you saying that you got your riot on in Baltimore?
It was in Atlantic City, and I went out one of the side doors because I didn't want to be anywhere near it and kept going. So I don't know exactly what happened. I actually saw more going on after watching the tape of the fight later, but, I'm busting Rockman's balls here, but to his credit, he's been prepared to make as much of a mega fight as anyone can because he was ready to face Vitali Klitschko. And that was supposed to be a big pay-per-view, and I believe it was November or December. So that's – Rockman at least has been there, but it's probably just as well for, you know, a Klitschko-Rockman fight not coming off, because as soon as Danny Williams beat Mike Tyson and Danny Williams took the spot that Tyson was supposed to have against Vitali, that kind of just put a bad aura all over his chance to make any money anyways. Klitschko, that whole fight, the people were thinking 750,000 buys for a possible Tyson-Klitschko fight, if not more, at $50 a pop. Instead, the thing to 120, I think they need 150,000 to even break even. So really, a Vitali-Rockman fight may have been like, it really may not have been that big of a deal. You know, and Rockman, a problem with him, also not a proven pay-per-view draw.
Yeah, that seems to be the problem with the entire division, and if Rockman Klitschko can't draw, you know, what are the hopes of somebody like Bird being able to draw? Because for better or worse, right now, Rockman and Klitschko, I mean, those are probably, just in terms of names, those are probably the two most recognizable names. I mean, unless you're talking, you know, I don't know, maybe we can get another dream match, maybe, we can cook up a Ruiz and Galata, you know, something along those
God.
Lines. Hey, I bet if it happens, they would have it in Chicago and proclaim it's the biggest event to happen in the city in 20 years. Because we, here in Chicago, Mike, our rich boxing history is, you know, it's very, very well kept up here because, you know, while Atlantic City gets their big fights and Las Vegas gets their big fights, We get Brewster Galata, the race war.
Well,
I mean, that's basically, for those that don't know and didn't see the local Chicago spin on it and the advertising, that's basically what it was. It's like, Andrew Galata, proud Polish fighter. Lamont Brewster, proud black man. What's gonna happen? Come to the United Center. It's like, oh my God, somebody's gonna die. And it's probably not going to be in the ring.
No, yeah, it's going to be somewhere in the crowd. It could be you.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is another reason you got to love boxing.
Exactly. Boxing is like, that's, and I, having been to a few boxing events in my life, and I'm sure, Mike, you've been to many more than I have, but there's something about going to a boxing show that you cannot compare to any other sporting event, even MMA. Because when I've attended MMA events, granted, you have some rowdy people and things get kind of weird, but for the most part, it's a bunch of people, like, just fairly respectful, and it's almost like everybody in the building kind of knows that everybody sitting next to them could kill them in 3 seconds and not with a gun, so you're kind of on your best behavior. Whereas at a boxing show, and particularly a few of them that I've been at, there's always this feeling that if the hometown guy doesn't pull through, you might die.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. I mean, I look at it as like, I really don't want to skydive. I'll take my adrenaline rush by going to boxing.
Well, yeah, because you're always waiting for that type of like Andrew Galata, Riddick Bowe MSG situation
yeah.
to break out, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of MSGs, we kind of like trickle back to here, try back to Chris Burr, because you mentioned it. Can Burr be a draw? He can't be. And it's been proven he can't be. Because as much as people can bust balls about Klitschko and that 120,000 buys, at least he can take credit for most of that.
Yeah.
He can take credit for a lot of that. Miguel Cotto deserves some, but the 17,000 people that went into L.A., Hollywood, Staples Center, They were there to see him.
Exactly.
And a month earlier in Madison Square Garden, every single heavyweight Don King had fought, and they ended up drawing 120,000. Yeah. And that included Chris Bird's defense against Jamil McClain, which was awful. Rockman's win over Kelly Meehan, awful. Title defense by John Ruiz, who is just human somonex and just can't not suck enough. He fought a lot of that fight was awful. And then Holyfield, I think I forget who he fought on that night too. Well, and there was the second biggest pay-per-view draw of all time, and he didn't add anything to it either. You know, to show how low interest is in the concept of a heavyweight champion is right now. That card Bird headline was still a 40% increase from his defense over Galata 7 months earlier.
Hey, Mike, my cure-all for boxing in the heavyweight scene, we need a boxing open-weight tournament.
Which has been talked about, believe it or not, has actually been talked about. Will it happen? No, because there needs to be some influence from Don King, but there was a plan to try to get all these guys in the ring. The problem is, I don't know if any of them want to get in the ring with each other.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, it's amazing that the boxing heavyweight division, there's a lot of interlinking stories where the guy will lose here and beat this guy and lose, and there's still just massive chaos.
Yeah.
Absolute chaos. I mean, the fact that John Ruiz, okay, well, I guess before I get to John Ruiz, I'll say something about James Toney, because James Toney was going to be the natural matchup for Chris Bird.
Yeah.
And it would have made a lot of sense, because you could have had it at a hotel or a casino outside of Michigan, or somewhere in Michigan outside of Detroit, where both of these guys are from. They were both former middleweights. They both turned into heavyweight champions. All James Toney, well, literally pissed that away when he took the urinalysis after his fight with John Ruiz. But there would have been the fight to make, and because they can't get together on that, we're left with James Toney and Haseem Rockman, which on March 18th in Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, it's going to be interesting to see whether they draw anywhere near what Arturo Gatti did.
Yeah, I kind of doubt that they will.
Yeah, but it's, you know, apparently Tony Rockman is a good fight, and it's as close to a huge fight as we're going to get. You know, this should actually be a unifying title fight, but Tony, like I said, literally pissed it away by testing positive for steroids before his fight or after his fight with John Ruiz last April, which I guess was good for one reason, because it gave Ruiz the opportunity to go ahead and lose the belt to a 7 foot, 324 pound freak. And who says K1's the only one with good freak heavyweights?
Exactly, and that's why I want that open weight tournament, Mike. You can't tell me. I mean, because basically, I mean, you also have to look at this. We talked about Butterbean. You're telling me you wouldn't want to see Butterbean in an open weight tournament.
I would like to see Butterbean against your ladies and gentlemen, new WBA heavyweight champion Nikolai Valuev, who, as a matter of full disclosure, I haven't seen fight. I do know he hasn't fought anyone except for Ruiz. So, like I said, he hasn't fought anyone.
You know? I'm getting the impression that I probably should cancel that interview inquiry to John Ruiz's management team.
Well, no, please get his management team on the air, because I don't know if you saw any of the clips about what happened after that fight, is his obnoxious, annoying trainer, Norman Stone, who I think is the only trainer I've ever seen who's been thrown out of ringside and put on one of the more pathetic performances you'd ever want to see, that most people saw on a big field against Roy Jones, and he's turned into more of a cartoon since. Actually stole the belt and tried to run away with it until one of Valuev's people punched him in the face.
Tremendous.
It was very cartoonish.
Wow. See, this is what I'm missing, what I've been missing out on over the last few years, Mike, and in all seriousness, though, Before we transition and talk about some of the good things happening in other weight divisions so we can actually feel good about boxing, are there any young fighters, young heavyweights coming up at all right now that should give us any hope, you know, beyond thinking they're going to be the next Tommy Morrison or the next Klitschko brothers or somebody that ends up being a disappointment? Anybody out there that really excites you in any way?
No.
Wow.
No. Wow. I mean, it's not overly bad, although, you know, with Valuev being a WBA champion, him holding that belt actually makes Lamon Brewster, who's actually the WBO champion, which was a organization first created in Europe. Well, not first created, still based, it's still a European based organization, but he actually holds that title.
Mm.
which, and he is 32 years old. Okay. Not a super young guy, but I think, I'm not sure, I think it was Larry Merchant who actually said 30 is the new 20 when it came to heavyweights a couple years ago. And it was the absolute truth, because we're seeing guys getting into boxing. When it comes to heavyweights, they seem to be a lot, they come along a lot later. They're failed light heavyweights. They're failed middleweights. It just seems to be happening this way, where Brewster is basically considered a relatively young guy. He, Calvin Brock, Samuel Peter, who I mentioned earlier, there's Sultan Ibrahimov. And that's pretty much all you got. Now, Brewster's 32, Ibrahimov's 30, Brock is 31, and Peter is 25, and they're about the only ones you can consider super young threats. And Brewster's by far the best of the bunch. He's had a lot of ups and downs. He nearly killed his career with two losses in 2000, but he rebounded nicely. He's won his last nine. He destroyed Vladimir Klitschko, and he destroyed Andrew Golota. But as the rule with the decision, Brewster did look shaky, of course. He has to look shaky in the last time out, last September, against Luis Konseki. And he actually trailed on the scorecards before knocking him out in the ninth. Now, to be fair, he would have had the knockout win in the eighth, but a long count kind of delayed the inevitable. But to his credit, he did take care of business, pardon me, in the ninth round. There is another guy out there, the boxing banker, Calvin Brock, who's undefeated at 27-0 with 21 knockouts. He slotted seventh for Ring Magazine, eighth in USA Today. He's been talked about a lot. Larry Merchant and HBO have actually featured him for a while now. You know, it's kind of amazing, though, considering the only wins he has of note are against Clifford ATN and against Jamil McClain, that he didn't make it out of the rounds of 16 during the 2000 Olympics. But he does have some serious pro potential. He should be happy the fight with Haseem Rahman did not take place, as was rumored in 2004 and 2005. You know, he didn't get too much credit because of his exciting Olympic teammates. I mean, Jermaine Taylor was on that team, Jeff Lefkowitz, Brian Valoria, the Hawaiian Punch, Rocky Juarez. Those guys were all on that team. Peter Manfredo Jr., and he's coming up soon, though, on ESPN as another contender redo. But Ricardo Williams Jr. is who I was thinking of, who's now, I believe, doing time for cocaine distribution.
Oh, nice.
So that didn't take too long for him to fall, but, lucky for him, he didn't have to face a whole lot of scrutiny, though. Brock was borrowing slow and really out of the radar, which was good, because a lot of the ball-busting that was going on with heavyweights from that Olympic team was the gold medalist, Audley Harrison from Britain, who got absolutely zero respect whatsoever in America, even after he came over on ESPN. He was just not an exciting fighter. He was a quote-unquote European fighter, and then, well, there's not much to him more anyway, as right now Danny Williams just knocked him out not long ago. So, you know, with all the bizarreness in this division, is a lot of things run together. Like I said, Harrison lost to Danny Williams, who had got blown out by Vitaly Klitschko, who was supposed to face Rockman. And there's all these interlying storylines. None of them really connect together and have made any sense for anything. Even like Samuel Peter, you know, he's 25-1, 21 knockouts. He's got the most upside about everybody, a big, strong, mean guy, and he won his last fight over Robert Hawkins, bouncing back from that Klitschko loss, and he didn't lose too much shine since his defeat, but he didn't impress against Hawkins at all, and he liked the intensity he showed against guys like Yankee Diaz and Taurus Sykes. So it's going to be interesting to see what goes along here, too. Blown up Cuban cruiserweight Juan Carlos Gomez is also another guy who's out there as well, and in fact, Yankee Diaz, the reason it was such a big deal about Peter wiping him out the way he did is because Diaz wiped out Gomez in the first round, too. And Gomez, also, quote-unquote, a younger fighter in the game, he's 32 years old.
Yeah, it does seem weird, like you mentioned, the fact that 30 is the new 20, which indicates to me, and it's kind of what you've said, that we're not seeing a lot of natural heavyweights. We're seeing guys who are either, you know, guys who are basically bulking up because they're unsuccessful at a different weight. But Mike, I think the best thing to do right now, I know the best thing to do right now, is to take a commercial break, and we'll come back and we'll close out the show by talking about some of the things that actually do make sense in boxing right now, and some of the reasons that outside of the heavyweight division, why everybody out there should care and should give it a chance. So we'll do that and wrap up any other loose ends right after the break.
IVPvideos.com is the home of the 10 DVD for $30 special. Single disc DVDs for $3.99 each, double disc DVDs for $6.99 each. Classic All Japan and Japanese Pro Wrestling DVDs, and a brand new Best of Japanese and Lucha 2005 DVD set, and a brand new Best of Shinya Hashimoto DVD. So check them out, IVPvideos.com, IVPvideos.com is the place to go for custom compilations and great classic Japanese pro wrestling DVDs.
For the absolute latest in pro wrestling and MMA news and commentary, check out www.f4wonline.com, home of the Figure 4 Daily Radio Show and the Figure 4 Weekly Newsletter. A free issue and two free radio shows are posted every week, and members have access to almost a dozen new shows and related audio hotlines per week, a newsletter archive spanning back 2 years, an exclusive forum, regular contests for free DVDs, CDs, and books, and much more. Check out the free content right now at www.f4wonline.com.
Fight Opinion Radio, getting ready to wrap things up. Adam Summers and Mike Sempervivi. And Mike, coming off the last segment where we basically talked about the heavyweight division and why it may be, at least for the time being, beyond repair, I think we need to do the sport of boxing justice and at least briefly talk about some things in the sport that really don't need repair, namely the lighter weight divisions and some of the very, very entertaining fights that have already gone on and some of the, a few of the upcoming fights that, I think people would probably want to check out.
Yeah, definitely. I guess as such a boxing fan, I didn't do it much justice there that first thing you're talking about the heavyweight division, although that's the best way to introduce people back into boxing.
Oh, yeah.
Is basically just talk about something they know, which is a really shitty heavyweight division. But there's also a lot of great things going on in the lighter weight classes. I mean, you look at the big guys. Just avoid the big guys. If you haven't watched boxing in a while, do yourself a favor. If you do watch boxing, don't wait for another heavyweight fight. Don't hold out hope for a heavyweight fight. Go watch your Corrales and your Castillos and all those guys who are under, you know, 205 pounds. I mean, there's a great fight coming up if you have Showtime. If you don't have Showtime, you should, because that's where a lot of great fighting is right now with the Showbox series and the fact that there's fights like Costa Zoo and Ricky Hatton taking place basically for $12 a month.
Yeah, which is insane compared to some of the cards you get on pay-per-view that aren't worth their weight in the paper the press release is printed on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Showtime, I think we have digital cable, so we have that package where you get all those channels for $12, and they repeat. There is so much boxing content between the on-demand and on Showtime right now. March 4th, taking place, a big fight. You know, it's obviously a lot bigger in England, and it's making them very happy. Jeff Lett took Lacey, the former Olympian I talked about earlier a little bit. He's going to face off against Calzaghe, who is an established super middleweight icon for the past several years, and it's a weight division that nobody really cared about. The last time anybody cared about it, it was just kind of skated through by Roy Jones on his way up to 175. That's a huge fight, and that's a very big fight for both of those guys to fix, because it's either going to sink, it's either going to really make Calzaghe's legacy as it goes along as being a big fighter, and then it's going to really set up Jeff Lacy the same way Jermaine Taylor was set up against Bernard Hopkins if he goes ahead and wins that fight. And they're still talking about Winky Wright and Jermaine Taylor, which may not be the greatest fight to watch, but if it's on HBO, I can't see that selling on pay-per-view, but if it's on HBO, it's a great fight to watch.
Oh, yeah, if that's an HBO fight, that instantly becomes a much bigger deal. And that's the place where it should be to be able to get its proper due. Quickly, what do you think would happen in that fight? I, as impressive as Taylor can be, I would actually have to go with Winky Wright.
Oh, yeah. Until somebody beats Winky Wright right now, the way he was able to just beat pros. I mean, he's beaten some pros. The last one coming along the pike being Trinidad.
Yeah.
He's a very difficult fighter to look good against, and he's got all of his shit together. And really, right now, he would throw too much at Jermaine Taylor. Frankly, I thought Taylor took the Hopkins fight too early. He proved me wrong. Maybe he'll prove me right again, wrong again with Winky Wright, but I doubt it. Winky Wright's just the type of guy that makes you look bad. And frankly, he's 1-1A as far as being the number one fighter in the world. Winky Wright deserves that spot along with Floyd Mayweather Jr. And it's looking like Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Zab Judah is going to happen. As we're talking about Carlos Baldomir and Arturo Gatti, who just fought over the weekend, beating up Thomas Damgaard. They're looking like that Judah Mayweather fight's still going to be on. That's going to be an incredibly fun fight, and that's one it probably is going to be worth to see on pay-per-view for all the defensive and cutesy little shit that they do.
Yeah.
Mayweather, when it is time to lay leather on, go back and watch the Diego Corrales fight again that he had where he just pounded on Corrales. Watch what he did to Arturo Gatti. When it's time to turn it on, Mayweather can turn it on, and that's why, as big of a prick as he is ranked and he is looked at as being such a great fighter. And he beat Arturo Gatti. Arturo Gatti just won something at Boardwalk Hall over the weekend again for like the 11th straight time. Just an amazing amount of people love Arturo Gatti for good reason. He is the blood and guts fighter. He's facing off against Carlos Valdemir. That looks like that fight's going to happen, leaving Ricky Hatton out in the cold a little bit. Although Ricky Hatton, who proved himself against Costa-Zu, a fun fighter, maybe getting his rep here in America very soon, as he's going to be actually maybe joining Golden Boy Promotions, or Oscar De La Hoya's group, which will be a big deal.
Yeah.
But just actually to close this out, Adam, because I know we have a lot of Japanese listeners, some credit and some respect and love give to Takashi Kashimoto, who at 35 years old became the oldest Japanese champion, in Japanese fighting history. The Southpaw, 35 years old, he turned on January 5th, beat Injin Chi, who, talk about a fun action fighter. He lost to Morales, but a loss to Morales where he did show himself a little bit and showed his absolute toughness and took some brutal shots from Morales. Got into one of the most underrated fights of the year with Michael Brody in their first fight in 2003, and then even in the rematch where he pounded him down and it left no doubt in anyone's mind. He was defending his title for, I think it was the third time he was making a title defense. And Koshimoto, a major upset. His father still trains and manages him, and he had gotten a shot against Freddie Norwood back in 2000 and was knocked out, but took advantage of his probably what was going to be his last title shot ever, at least on a major scale. So a lot of respect to Koshimoto and a lot of respect to Virgil Hill at 42 years old. Granted, he beat a machine and a guy who went straight ahead, but a win is a win. And Virgil Hill setting himself up possibly one more payday for him since he was such a nice guy. You know what? I'll take it.
Yeah, I was surprised when you had mentioned Virgil Hill last week. I realized he was old. I didn't realize he was 42, but he, for anybody that thought that he was completely out of it and might not have had anything, left, I think people might be thinking differently about that.
Well, yeah, and I tell you, it's obviously that cruiserweight title, you know, not that big of a deal.
No, not in the grand scheme of things.
But. Yeah, not in the grand scheme of things, but I tell you what, you get one more shot to make some money against a guy like, I don't know, Antonio Tarver.
Yeah.
May not be a bad move there. And also, by the way, Showtime fans, HBO and Roy Jones Jr. have parted ways, by the way, just to let everyone know that, too, in case they didn't hear that. So,
yeah.
And by the way, also, Tarver may be going to Showtime, too, although I don't think that's going to happen. I think HBO holds on to him.
Yeah, you think they would, you think they'd want to, at least.
Yeah, I think he's such a glib guy, such a personable, charismatic guy. I think Antonio Tarver stays at HBO.
Yeah. I think, Mike, basically the moral of this story is don't freak out when you see a bunch of fights on pay-per-view. Do yourself a favor. Get either Showtime or HBO, or even if you have the money, get both, and just treat yourself to seeing some really, really good boxing without having to feel guilty about plunking down half your paycheck.
Well, yeah, and if you're going to buy a pay-per-view that you haven't seen in a while, whatever, if there's a heavyweight at the top of the card, don't get it.
Yeah.
And the second thing to do is go to your local bodega, go to your local, whatever the quote-unquote Mexican part of town is, or the Guatemalan or the Puerto Rican part of town, and go in and ask them, because I can tell you what, you know, Barrera, Morales, Pacquiao, who's, Filipino, but any of those guys in those lower weight classes are probably going to bring you the action, and they always bring you the most for your dollar, and Pacquiao Morales proved that too. So I think the moral of this story, don't trust anyone over 175 pounds.
That's a pretty good moral for life in general, actually.
And for dating, as I've seen. So
very, very good advice. Wow. See, that's, you know, you bust out the boxing and then all this other knowledge comes to the forefront. But I think that after learning that pearl of wisdom about what not to do in terms of dating, I think we need to let everybody go back to their normal lives, Mike. Or at least as normal as their lives can be after listening to us.
That would be, yeah, that's really, we thank you for joining us for another hour or probably hour and about 20 to 30 minutes, I think, whatever this show is. But we thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed listening to a little bit of boxing. And hope you enjoyed listening to Rob Sayers.
Definitely.
Who did a very nice job there in the opening segment. And I'd like to also thank Zach Arnold for not being here.
That's right. For those that haven't heard the dulcet tones of Zach Arnold and might be a little bit upset, have no fear. Zach Arnold is doing some prep work and doing some recording for, I believe, his maiden voyage on the Dr. Keith ship. The Dr. Keith Lipinski show will be getting a little bit of Zach Arnold love. So that's why our fearless leader is not in studio today, but Mike and I somehow managed to survive, and I have a feeling that we'll survive onto another day. So with that, I think give everybody our email addresses real quick so they can give us some feedback on the show and how they felt about the boxing coverage and if they'd like to hear more. So with that, you can get a hold of me at adamsummers_81@yahoo.com. If you need to talk to Zach for any reason, and really, who doesn't from time to time, you can get a hold of him at peresupower@hotmail.com.
Absolutely. In fact, if you just wanted to go ahead and yell at all of us at once, you could do that at pphradio@hotmail.com. If you just want to yell at me individually, and I know that you do, you can do it at semp, S-E-M-P, at gumgod.com, or go ahead and email me at befairtoflair, B-E-F-A-I-R, the number 2, F-L-A-I-R. Yes, I have been influenced that much by professional wrestling. net@comcast.net. And we invite you also, make sure you check out the Dr. Keith Lipinski Show. Make sure you check out the Peresu Power Hour. And make sure you check out, well, the litany of other things, including one of my appearances and Keith's appearances taking place very soon on the Figure Four Weekly.
Yes, definitely. For some reason, it seems like everybody's everywhere, which is a very good thing. So with that, we'll wrap things up until next week, when I'm sure, Mike, there'll be much, much fallout from the UFC pay-per-view and many other things to talk about. So with that, we will definitely wrap things up right now. For Mike Sempervivi, for the missing in action Zach Arnold, this is, as always, Adam Summers saying thank you for listening, and we will speak to you next week on Fight Opinion Radio.